to Electrician Live with your host, Paul Abernathy and Jay Brunberg.
Well, howdy, howdy, everybody. Welcome to another episode of Electrician Live, the show for electricians that comes to you every Thursday night at 8 p.m. Central Standard Time. My name is Paul Abernathy, one of your hosts, and with me, my co-host, as always, Mr. Jay Grunberg. Mr. Grunberg, welcome to the show, as always.
Happy Thursday night to everybody. What's going on, Paul? How are you?
I'm doing good. Everybody, give a shout out to everybody that's joined us in the room. Let's see here. Actually, you know what? Jay, why don't you say hey to everybody again?
Yeah, hey, everybody. What's going on? Happy Thursday night, and thanks for joining us.
Helps if I turn your mic on. Everybody, thanks again. Jay, for everybody for joining us, as always, here on Electrician Live. And Jay, what do we got? Who we got in the room? What do we got? Let us give a little shout out.
So far, we got O's in the house from Los Angeles. Sinister Sparky. What's happened, Sinister? Joseph Richardson. And Joseph Dunfree from Raining, New Jersey. Must be raining cats and dogs out there.
Whoop, whoop.
Nolan Battles from Tennessee. So, a bunch of guys in the house, but guys and gals. I noticed, actually, last night we had a lady who joined us on our code exam prep, and it was good. It was good to hear her actually ask some questions and get involved and actually have a female presence in the room.
You mean the exam prep last night?
Exam prep last night. That was really nice to hear. So,
yep. I love the women in the trade, most certainly, and representing, and love to see it. Love to see it. So, Jay, tell us, how's the week been in Colorado?
Oh, the week's been amazing, man. Weather's good. Work is good. The family's doing good. No complaints here in Colorado. How are you guys doing down there in Texas?
We're doing good. It's hot. It's 99, it's hot. 100, 101. It's hot. I'll just say that. It's hot. I'm melting, like sweetness does. But I wanted to say something, Jay. How far are you from Colorado Springs?
Probably about an hour and a half away.
See, that's nothing. There's a dude that I found on the internet. Y'all go check him out. It's called the Dragon Man. Just go to YouTube and type in Dragon Man Colorado. This dude is amazing. He's got the best and the biggest private museum when it comes to military memorabilia. It is just amazing. So shout out to Dragon Man. Go to YouTube and check it out. This dude is just machine guns, automatic. I mean, this dude is amazing. Anyway, check him out.
Got everything going on, huh?
He's got everything, but he's an hour and a half from you, dude, and you haven't been there. Then I don't know. I don't know how much of a gun guy Jay is at that point. I guess before we get started too deep here, we got to do a sponsor for tonight's show. As you see across the bottom of the screen, Electrician Pride. Please do me a favor, give it a check out. Look at it. Also, if you're watching over on the YouTube channel, make sure you give us a thumbs up and share it with people, okay? Thumbs up, definitely thumbs up. Appreciate it. If you're listening to our podcast, it's running over on electricianlive.com website. You can always just listen there if you're, like, going down the road chilling. You can listen there. You can also watch the videos there. But, again, come over to the YouTube channel. You can watch us live as we do the podcast. This is a podcast. We have a video version here of it, obviously, but it is a podcast. So anyway, let's run this commercial and we'll get into tonight's topic. Today's show is sponsored by electricianpride.com. Your one-stop shop for electrician-specific t-shirts, hoodies, phone cases, mugs, die-cut stickers, leggings, and so much more. Featuring unique designs for electricians, journeymen, and master electricians, as well as electrical engineers and electrical inspectors. For more information on all the products that are available, visit us at www.electricianpride.com today. All right, so check it out over at electricianpride.com. Some things are a little pricey, but, you know, like these hats and all. But, again, when you do one-offs, it's hard. We don't inventory those things, so.
Yeah, there's nothing right nowadays that's going to be cheap.
That is true. My brother told me just the other day, my brother back in Virginia, he was calling me up and giving me a hard time. I was talking to him, he was giving me a hard time, that 14.2 NMB now is some places it's a $120 for 250-foot reel, $130, $104, and then 12.2 is like $180 somewhere. I was like, that's outrageous pricing, man. He said he went to get some PVC conduit, and it doubled. It went up like, well, I think he said it was $9 a stick, and it went up to like $16 or $17. I mean, the prices have gone crazy. If you're a contractor and you didn't take that stuff into account after you bid something, you're going to be adjusting your bids or something. Do you have a clause in any of your stuff, Jay, when you bid something? And are you locked to it?
No, I think we have a 30-day bid. So after 30 days, that bid expires. And I think on previous shows, I told you guys before that it was really hard for us to try to up our prices in the beginning.
Right.
Because the contractors wanted 30 days notice. And I respected that. So I sent the letter out, and a lot of them, I gave the 30-day notice, and any projects that we had already bid previously, mm-hmm. I stayed with that contract. And I even went with one or two extras even after the markup, in the material price. So again, Wired Up took a bit of a hit, but we actually ironed everything out. Now we're smooth sailing. So, you know, as a contractor, you're going to take those hits. You just have to brace for them and hope that, you know, people's with the price increase that they still use you. And believe it or not, we're still in a high demand, you guys. Sure. We are needed. Even with the high prices, people sure. have to pay it. You know, the contractor, I think the actual GC is the one who gets hit a lot because they're juggling all the subs underneath them. So for those guys, I don't know how they do it.
Well, you're not gouging, man. You're just charging fees that you have to fee that charge. So, I mean, everything changes. It's not like you're not. It's not like you're in the middle of a hurricane and the power's out and you're selling a generator for 10 times its worth. I mean, our demand is up, the price is up, products up. You know, all this type of stuff drives everything. So it's. I guess I'm glad I'm not contracting anymore. Because up and down, the pricing would just drive you crazy. You have to have some clause in there to help you out, definitely.
Yeah, definitely. Hey, big shout out to Alvin from Caribbean Street. He listening to us for the first time, so thanks, Alvin, checking in.
That's it. All you get of that. Just give you a little
Wiring
bit of love.
Wiring Guru is from Phoenix, checking in for the first time. Yeah, so thanks for joining us, Wiring Guru.
I believe that's Matt. He's in the Fast Tracks program. Absolutely.
Matt's in the Fast Track. What's happening, Matt? Cisco Flores tuning in from Idaho.
Idaho. In the house, the potato state. Idaho potatoes.
Robert Solis from San Antonio chiming in. And of course, oh, we see you, man. O's in the house.
O's in the house. You know who we haven't seen in a long time?
Who's that?
Rombo.
Yeah, Rombo. Rombo's
he's
missing.
Busy all the time, but I mean, he's clockwork. I don't know what happened to him. He's AOL or AWL or whatever, AWOL or whatever you call it. Anyway, Jay.
Where is Rombo?
It's like, where's Waldo? Where's Rombo? He's up there in Tennessee. I swear I keep saying when I get up to Tennessee, I'm going to look him up. Most certainly am. But anyway, he's working all kinds of inventions, man. Y'all know he's got the, I don't know if you saw it, Jay. I told you. I dropped this thing on the floor and put a hole in my floor. He's got this thing that he does that drives ground rods. There's different ones out there, but this one's pretty stout. So if you're interested in that, just let us know. Host@electricianlive.com. We'll put you in contact with
put your hand around that on that portion where you'd hit. No, flip it the other way around. There you go.
Oh, yeah.
Because if you're taking a hammer, you're not even going to hit your hand or your fingers.
No, some of them, they're round, and they're just to barely pass the profile of your hand. So they put some extra metal on this thing. So, I mean, even if you off-hit this thing is thick. I'm telling you, I'm just guessing this is almost a half-inch thick of that steel. Yeah. And this is steel, okay?
Wow, Rambo.
So there you go. So anyway, this is stuff that Rambo does. Nice weld, I should say. Not too bad at all. So anyway, he's got other things going on, but that's something that's his. These are nice if you want to drive it that last couple inches. You know, you don't want to get your hammer drilled. If you're using an attachment, you get it down, and you want to drive that last piece down. You want to get it because you know you're supposed to get your ground rods what? Below grade level, not above grade level. And be honest with you, you're supposed to get them below the frost line as well, but nobody does that. So at least get them below the ground, right? So you can protect those connectors just below the surface. Because if they're above the surface, you know somebody's going to hit them and loosen them and damage them. So anyway,
you're going to trip over that darn thing.
That's true. Or you could impale yourself. How about that? This is a nice little thing to have in a truck. I did drop this thing, fell off my table onto the floor, and actually cracked my floor. My laminate, whatever floor. So it did a number on it. Anyway, let me put that over there. I didn't send Rambo. I didn't send him the bill. All right. Anyway, so my man, what is our topic for tonight? What are we going to talk about tonight?
We're going to talk about leadership training.
Leadership skills, leadership training, our thoughts on what it takes to be a good leader. Who needs to be a leader in a company, in a crew? Is it always the owner? Can it be the helper? Can it be the, you know, sometimes, believe it or not, I've seen some helpers, some apprentices step up on job sites before and be leaders, dude. I've seen it. So we're going to talk about that tonight. We have prepared slightly, so we have some notes and little thingies to discuss. So we'll go and look at some of the things. So kind of start the ball off with us tonight. You want to give up some of your thoughts on leadership before we get into some of the different discussions here, or maybe you see some of these that are ones that you want to talk about, or do you have something you want to bring up, Jay?
I think just in leadership in general, I think it's really your actions and not your position. And what I mean by that is I think every day we as individuals have opportunities, if we're looking for them or looking out for them or kind of being aware of them, to actually step in and be a leader at any given level, you know. Mm-hmm. And again, that might be de-escalating a situation between maybe two employees on the job site. You know, maybe you have the we're about to step in and kind of separate two guys or whoever it is. And that's, again, that's kind of a leadership action that you're taking at that moment, if you're comfortable doing it. And again, there's also other situations that every day that you're going to be, if you're aware of, you can step in and actually be that leader. So again, I don't always think it's just the position you hold. Right. I think it's sometimes the actions that you use.
You carry yourself. You mean, you know, with all the old saying, all the eyes are on you. So how you act, how you carry yourself kind of reflects on you and kind of steers other people in that direction. If you're goofing off or messing off or doing something that's not leadership, then somebody else is going to follow and then it just goes to crap. So some of our thoughts that I think, you know, we got this list of different ones and things to talk about. But just kind of touching on certain things. So if I'm looking at some of the leadership skills, and this would be something that would be on our number one agenda, Jay, is the SWOT yourself or SWOT yourself. And what that is it's also basically it's a self-evaluation. It says it's acronyms for strength, weakness, opportunities, and threats. So one of the things it says, although it's a strategic management tool taught at Stanford and Harvard Business School, so they much teach the SWOT theory, right? For me, and I'll give you my take on it beyond what this is, because this is just something pulled up here about it. Basically, it's to gain access to self-knowledge, self-remembering, self-honor. Start by listing all of your strengths. So this is something that we do as go down for yourself, write down all of the things that you feel make you a good leader, right? all the things that you're willing to be decisive, make decisions, be responsible. If you're a leader and you work for somebody, I work for Jay, let's say. I've got Jay's best interests in mind. We had our guest last week, Mr. Westfall.
Chris Westfall.
Chris was, very impressed with that young man, very much so. I am sure that he could probably put a list of his strengths. And he wants to have a list of what you feel your weaknesses are that you can improve on. Maybe you don't communicate well. Maybe you get hot-headed quickly. Maybe you always feel like you're right and everybody's wrong. Again, in leadership role, you got to have humility. And we'll talk about those different things. But kind of do a self-awareness of what your strengths are, but then be very honest with yourself about what your weaknesses are. The other thing is, I think
what that allows you to do is kind of you're just doing your own judgment of yourself, right? Mm-hmm. Instead of really going out there and asking individuals and trying to take what you've accomplished in the role that you're at. And the reason why I said before that this is for anybody is because anybody can do these number lists that we're giving you guys. You know, anybody mm-hmm. can do the SWOT. They can write down their strengths, their weaknesses. This could be apprentices. This could be, you know, even your role as even a father figure in myself. What are my strengths? What are my weaknesses? So you can take this leadership training right here, this SWOT tactic, and use it in your career field, and also use it outside of it at any level that you're at. And that's what I like about this. I like the strengths and weaknesses. It kind of gives you something to kind of go, dang, you know what? I am kind of unorganized, Jay. You say that you're going to do something, and maybe you don't always do it, you know, and how big of a,
well, your weakness, what is
do
your
I
weakness?
Look if I do that?
Your weakness is you don't feel like you follow through with things, that type of thing. That can be a weakness. You could have fears.
Totally.
You could have anxieties. You could have that you feel you're not worthy, right? There's plenty of people that will sabotage their ability to be a leadership because they think they don't know enough or they're not good enough or they're whatever. So be honest when you do a analysis of yourself in your leadership role, what your strengths are, what your weaknesses are. Also, identify opportunities. Now, I'm a little different on this one. It says, then proceed by listing all the opportunities you see available to you to use your strengths. Obviously, I would also say list all the opportunities that you can make available to yourself to overcome your weaknesses. If you feel like you're not very strong in certain area, it's code, or maybe it's in, bookkeeping, or whatever you're doing as part of your leadership role. Maybe you're not as well thought, knowledgeable in OSHA, and you need to be, or something like that. That's a weakness. Then you spend time and you target. You know, I used to tell people all the time, Jay, when it comes to learning code, pick an article that you find tough. And don't give up on it until you really understand it. So I tell people, I challenge people all the time. I say, well, I wish I knew the code better or this better. I was like, where do you find a weakness at? Well, I got a weakness when I do service calcs. I just don't understand all the steps. Okay. Immerse yourself into it and don't leave it. Don't jump around. Immerse yourself into it until you walk away and go, I got this. Next, mark that off the list. That's those type of things. So,
don't
and also
you, don't
look
you
at all those opportunities
though,
too. Huh?
Don't you think at times when you have that list, it can kind of be overwhelming?
It can.
Because, you know, you create like a 5 to 10 item list, checklist, and you're like, wow, man, I'm overwhelmed with what I have on my plate. But kind of like what you were saying, maybe you just address one at a time.
Sure. Yeah. Yeah.
Or how would you go about that? If you had five weaknesses.
Yeah. Weaknesses,
would you
fears,
start with the hardest?
Anxieties, things like that.
Yeah. Where would you start attacking those? Or how would you improve in those? I mean, would you do one at a time? Would you say, I mean, personally,
well,
would you do one at a time, or?
I guess it depends on the list, but if I had an anxiety, let's say I was a leader and I was over top of a bunch of guys or gals, we got guys and gals, and I'm over top of a bunch of them and I'm telling them to do things and I notice that they're doing stuff that I'm not well versed in. Maybe they're doing transformers, or we got a bunch of transformers we're installing, or something, motors or something. And I just have a weakness in that. And I'm telling other people to do this and that, but I know when I'm looking at them and I'm telling them to do something, but inside when I walk away, I go, Gee, I don't know as much as that. If your insides say to you that you don't know enough, that you can tell, right? Is anybody out there never told somebody to do something and walk away and go, I'm not even really 100% sure I know how to do something, you know, that type of thing, okay? That's a weakness. That's an anxiety. That's stressful. So I tackle those by getting the knowledge, getting the training, taking the courses, taking classes, doing what I need to do so that I remove that. If I stress, if being a leader, I hate the end of the month when, let's say, you work for Jay, and Jay is a strict owner, and he wants a full inventory of the vehicles at the end of each month. So you get towards the end of the month, you get really anxious. Your weakness is organizational skills. I can attest to that. All you got to do is look around here. And I'm constantly working on that because I'm constantly writing down on my dry erase board what I need to improve myself with. And it's you know, you've heard me say, my screen on my computer has crap everywhere. Almost last night, Jay, I couldn't even find my presentation to do my motors class because I couldn't find the thing. So a leader doesn't have to be perfect in everything, but they have to be able to identify where their weaknesses are. They have to understand their strength. My strength is teaching, motivating, code, those things like that. But I have my weaknesses, right? And so when I've got those weaknesses, I need to actively work. And it could be all of them, Jay, depending on what they are. But maybe I target the ones that are going to affect my dreams. In other words, as a leader, you also need to have dreams, ambitions, where you want to go, where you want to be. Yeah. How do you achieve those? Are your strengths going to get you there? Do you need to eliminate your weaknesses to make sure that your strength overpowers the weakness? Do you have to look for opportunities? What is opportunity? The opportunity means if I've got to stock the truck. Jay's told me that every month I have to do an inventory, and I'm not looking forward to it. My organizational skills suck, and he's told me this. As my boss, he needs to tell me these things constructively, but tell me these things. Okay, how do I improve that weakness? Because it's obviously going to be very evident to Jay when I get better at it and the truck looks neater. Everything looks better. He's going to go, yeah. Whoa, all right, man. All right. So that is where I'm looking for my opportunity. So maybe I get an Excel sheet. Maybe I get come up with a way to inventory my truck so that I keep it there on a clipboard so that when I use something, and maybe it's a service truck, when I use something, I mark it down so that I can replenish it so that it makes my inventory easier at the end of the month rather than just throwing crap all in the back of a truck. It's just an example, yeah. That type of thing.
Yeah, I think you're right, though. I think with some of our weaknesses, we can definitely acknowledge them, highlight them, and get better at them. But that doesn't mean that all of a sudden our weakness is going to become one of our strengths. We're all going to have weaknesses. And that was kind of my point of that question, saying, where would you start? And you did a great answer by saying, hey, I would take one thing, try to improve in that area. But knowing that, hey, even just doing that Excel sheet, it's going to cover my butt at the end of the month to have this van, you know, looking good. I that may not be my strength, like my other guy over here, who his van is crazy clean, but he doesn't know maybe how to fill out a T&M ticket. Mm-hmm. Whereas then I fill out a T&M ticket good or very well, but my van isn't clean. Again, we're going to have weaknesses, and you just keep working on it, man. I'll probably have some of my weaknesses for the rest of my life, you know, but
right.
You know, what can we do? Do your best, sub the rest.
That's right.
That's what Sinister says. So what you're saying is do the best, pay for the rest. Because when you're subbing the rest, you're probably giving funds out to
yeah, I don't give money away
for that weakness. So
I only sub out what I don't know nothing about. If it's electrical, I'm going to try to do it.
That's right.
Okay. The last
so
one
three is
SWAT.
Follow your. Oh, yeah. Go ahead.
Well, SWAT mm-hmm. is one of those things.
S-W-O-T. The last one
is. Yeah. The last thing is threat. And it says threats are, write down all the threats or obstacles that are currently blocking you. I'll give you a great example. A lot of people, what's blocking them to be great leaders is they might be journeymen and they're not masters yet. And maybe that license is in their way to get to where they want to be. That's an obstacle. So you tackle the obstacle. You learn where your weaknesses are. You learn where the threats to your success are. Okay, that doesn't mean if you have two electricians on the job and you want to be the leader and the other one's there, you get rid of the threat. That's not what Paul's saying. Okay. You both can coexist. Okay. Don't bump them off. What I'm saying is you have to identify your threat and then put that in your plan to overcome the threat so that you have these opportunities so that you can be successful as you know, in your leadership role. Okay. All right. Enough of that one. Go on to the next one. What do we got? Well, we're not going in any specific order of these. So just wherever you want.
Yeah, well, I think with number three, it does say follow your bliss, and that just is kind of like how busy you are. You know, make sure you're doing something that you love. Make sure you're still trying to have fun with it, right? Follow your dream, chase your dream. If we're always in a negative mindset, it won't allow us to be able to pursue happiness. You know, because we definitely want to try to find some type of happiness within our leadership. And I guess my question. This is kind of off the leadership skill checklist, but I'm going to go here. I don't think everybody wants to be in a higher role than usually where they're at right now. You know, that's the goal, right?
Greener,
just to continue, right? Yeah, exactly. The grass
is always
greener. So where I'm at now, I see that guy above me and I go, man, I want to be where he's at. Okay. Mm-hmm. Why do you want to be where he's at? You know, he gets 2 weeks vacation paid.
Sure.
He makes a certain amount of salary. He drives a company vehicle. You know, he's getting gas. He's getting food. He's traveling. He's getting certain training. Mm-hmm. And then it's like, okay. On the other hand, what responsibility now is that role that he has? What or that role that I want that he has or she has, whoever. What responsibility does that come with that pay increase?
Sure.
With that company truck, with all the you know, the bells and whistles that everybody wants, and that's where I think people get lost in the sauce is they want to get up there, but why are you getting up there? Is it because you envy this person? Is it because you're ready to make that next step? Is it money? Because what happens a lot of times with leadership and new roles, whether you're promoted or whether maybe you put yourself in and there's an opening and you apply for it, right? Because there's two different ways. You go and attack it, or someone is asking you to step up to that position, right? Like it goes two ways. And at the end of the day, you really have to understand, is it worth the responsibility? Because sure. Every leadership position I've ever went into, there's always been a responsibility on the other side of that I was unaware of. You know what I mean? Or maybe I didn't take in consideration. Well, maybe we didn't talk about it at the interview.
Well, every leader realizes that once you get past the entry door into the leadership role, there's baggage waiting for you. I mean, it's, you know,
yeah.
I went from Virginia to Texas on a promise that never happened. Now I'm still in Texas. So it can happen. So again, take for a grain of salt what promises are made to you. Again, you have to know what you want and what you're driving for. But I think also following the bliss is also something about, I should say, is if you enjoy what you do, it comes through. I don't know anybody that's a leader that does nothing but moan and groan and gripe all day long about their position or where they're at, that are happy, that... It drags everybody else down. So a good leader I will say this, a good leader will leave the baggage at home and will always put on a face, right? And you know, that I found that to be very, you know, we're not saying a good worker. You can be very skilled, but if you come to work and you're a leader and you're just miserable and you're always barking and you're kind of a teller and not a doer, it's going to come across and your people aren't going to follow you. And so at the end of the day, it doesn't matter what you label yourself as a leader. If you come across a certain way to your people, they're not going to follow you. They're not going to jump on that landmine for you. You know,
yeah,
they're not
that extra mile for you. Yeah.
And you have some leaders that are very down to earth. They're very passionate about what they do. Again, they follow their bliss. This is what they want to do. They feel they're there. Dude, people will go out of their way. Your people that you lead will go out of their way to do things for you. Okay. Yep. So just different.
I agree. Yeah. I also think with that too, with when you're applying for that leadership position, or again, you're being asked to step up, kind of like what I did with Chris, my PM last week, we kind of talked about this, was I asked him to step into this role. I offered him X amount. We talked about it. We sat down. We made it very clear what our expectations was from him, and he made it very clear what he expected from us. And both of us have actually lived up to our end of the deals. With that being said, he left a position that it was almost so when you're in that role like Chris was, and you're being asked to step up, okay, did he have the skill to do it? Yes. Has he done it before in different areas? Yes. But what happens if he doesn't make that fit? What happens for that guy who's stepping up? Maybe he goes, yeah, I want to take it on. That's okay. Well, he does it for 3 months. Maybe he's not really good at it, or she's not good at it. And then it's like, okay, now where do I go with this individual? As an owner, I'm going, well, I don't want to put him back down. I can, but now he's taking a pay decrease. And so as an owner, I'm going, I don't know what to do with them. But as that guy, as Chris or whoever's in that role, you're giving up where you were at before to step into that leadership. And I guess my point is when you take on that leadership, be prepared, because if you don't live up to the end, or they don't, you're probably not going to reset back down to where you were at.
Right.
Do you know what I mean? A lot of times it doesn't happen. And some companies will. They'll say, hey, if this doesn't work out for you, we'll put you back down. But again, it's giving up something.
Yeah, if you're not prepared,
it's a risk.
If you're not,
I think it's a risk.
If you're not prepared for it, you could be just quickening your exit out the door. Because they move you up, you move you up. You might have been doing great work. They move you up. You're willing to take a leadership role. You don't perform. They all of a sudden get amnesia when it comes how good you did to get that position. They look at what you did in that position, and then they go,
"Yeah,
he can't cut it." And it's already
he can't cut it.
It already tainted you, and you can't just say, I want to go back now to non-leadership role. So be careful. You know what I mean? So the next one, the next one I want to talk about is one, it's me and mentors. I will say any good leader that I know through my years, and I've had my share of mentors, I've mentored plenty of other people, and the deal with a mentor is not that they're the knower of everything. It's just that they can be brutally honest when they're looking at your strengths and your weaknesses and have a conversation. And a good mentor is not afraid to tell you the truth. This is not about a woke culture. This is not about hurting your feelings. This is not about offending you. This is saying, look, I want somebody to mentor me. And I need you. We're not talking about teach you how to pull cable. We're not talking about teaching, mentoring you how to pull wire. We're talking about mentoring you in leadership skills, somebody you look up to, somebody who's a good leader, somebody that you feels a good leader that everybody likes and everybody gets along with, yet he's firm enough to make sure they get the job done. Those are there's leadership skills in somebody that you're like, is somebody you look up to. It might be your parents. It might be, who knows? But you look at him and you go, you know, I would love you to mentor me. And basically, I want to be able to bounce things off you, and I want the honest truth. That's it.
Yeah.
I want the honest truth. I don't want it candy-coated. I don't want what happens when a CEO tells his employees to tell me what they got a problem, and they won't say anything because it's the CEO. You know, they want to keep their job. You know, you basically want to know what, you know, you can, somebody to bounce things off of. A good mentor does that, okay? And there's plenty of opportunity out there with people you know. There's people that you might look up in your industry, another industry, that you can ask them, I'd love you to mentor me. That doesn't mean that they have to do a whole lot of work. That just means that they have an ear. And there's a lot of people mentor people indirectly. They don't have to ask. They'll call them up and ask different questions because they believe in that person and what they say. And it could be on a broad range of topics. I mean, I get calls all the time for how to deal with employees. From my buddies back in Virginia and all that, you know, human resource applications and things like that. How would you deal with this, Paul? And we can, sometimes you need somebody, a peer that you can, and you're not talking down, you're talking to. That's another big thing in leadership to me. Learn the skill of talking to somebody and not down to somebody. Okay. Be able to realize that you can have a conversation and do that without really talking down to them. That type of thing. A good leader can look for those type of things and check themselves when they feel like they're getting a little bit out of control with that, you know, kind of a preaching mode and just kind of just having a conversation type of mode.
Yeah, I think the mentor is a big thing. I think being yourself is another great thing about being a leader. You know, find yourself in that role. Find yourself. Don't try to be someone you're not. I've actually ran into this a lot with myself when I was running a business and bringing people on. I would feel like I had to make my hire, the person I'm hiring, my employee, that I'd have to make them happy, you know, to keep them around. And whether that was, you know, just talking to them nicely, not really being too hard on them. You know, you tend to try to make people like you because then they'll stick around. Right. You're like, okay, right. I kind of need this person. Where at the end of the day, I wasn't being myself, you know, and after the years, after I found some really good people that worked for me, I was able to kind of be myself. And I tell you what, being yourself on a job and doesn't mean you can't change the ways you feel and act and think. That's not what I'm saying. That's going to go with the leadership. That's doing the SWOT, right? You're doing your strengths and your weaknesses. But what I'm saying is just be you. Be who you are, and that's the best way to do it. Is to be you, and then also listen. You know, a lot of leaders they don't want to listen. They want to gab a lot and kind of, you know, take shots. Chris Westphal and I, we put on a Zoom meeting once every few months. We do it with our crew leads and we do it with our apprentices because I really think it's important for us as leaders to listen to the people at, you know, what we would call at the very bottom, working themselves up. And every time, believe it or not, every time we'd have those 45-minute conversations with three or four apprentices, we'd find 2 to 3 good things to implement into our system.
Yep.
Have you ever had that where you're actually talking, you know, or asking input from someone who's lower than you or you know, in a different role below you?
Sure. The funny thing about things is that everybody's got a different opinion and they see it from a different side of the glass. Yeah. So, you know, when I talk about something or whatever, and I think, God, this is so obvious, but somebody else doesn't get it. It's because they're seeing it from a totally different perspective than me. Right. So I have to totally, you know, always remember that because again, there is a way to do it. And also, I think that any really good leader, and this one we probably kind of talked about before, is willing, when you say listen, I think when I did an analysis of myself, and I've done this multiple times, my strength, my weaknesses, and I, you know, I oversee people where I work, and of course I've had, through the years, tons of people that have worked for me. I have a weakness that I constantly have to work on. And when it comes to a discussion, for example, I sometimes do not let the person finish what they're saying. Right?
Same.
I mean, I know what they're saying and I get it. And once they're halfway through what they're asking, I register what they're asking. And then I start giving the answer only to find out that there was still an extra twist on what they were asking. And then we got to go, oh, okay. You mean it? When I looked at some of the leaders that I look up to, one of them, you know, like for example, different ones like Daniel Jones with Encore Wire, you know, multimillionaire CEO of Encore Wire Corporation. And I look at somebody when he does it, he actually, whether he knows the answer or not. Okay. I mean, this guy is uber rich. Okay. He owns on a golf course. He owns three houses. Is on three holes. In other words, his house encompasses three holes on a golf course. But humble as you're ever going to get, and the nicest guy you're ever going to get, but when you have a conversation with him, he will never interrupt you. He will let you finish what you say. And so One of the things that I had somebody tell me years ago, and I tell people, and I still struggle with this, is the 3-second rule. The 3-second rule is for me to force myself, and it's for me to let Jay talk, and then after I'm done speaking, or after you're done speaking, I go 1001, 1002, 1003. So I actually, if I'm doing this to somebody as a leader, and I'm giving them something. And you'll see some people that are very good politicians do this, okay? It's because it's a skill that they'll talk. Somebody will talk, and they'll look at them. And I'll tell you who used to be the greatest at this, whether I like them or not, was Bill Clinton. Go back and watch some of Bill Clinton's stuff, and you'll see when he talks at you, he would go like, here's what he would do. You ready? You say something to him, and he would... What he's doing is he's pausing it, and he'll look at you and go, I did not have sexual relations with that woman, Monica Lewinsky. You know what I'm saying? So, I mean, he would pause. You know what I'm saying? So, anyway, I mean, I don't know if that's exactly what he said, but anyway, it's something like that. But you believed him. He was lying. But you believed him, but he, you know, he had that pause. And so that's one of those things that it forces you to listen to what the other person has to say. Yeah. And there's another interesting leadership tip I'll give you that I do with some of the people is summarize. You'd be amazed if you're having a conversation, and I want you, Jay, see, me and you're having a conversation. I'm the leader, and you work for me. You have something to say to me that you want help with on the job, right? And I listen to you. And now you finish, and I'm like, 1001, 1002, I'm acknowledging you. And then I might go, okay, Jay, so what you're saying is, and what I do is I basically give you back a brief summary of what you just asked me so that I know that I heard you right. Because what that does in you is you see me as a leader. You also see me as somebody that actually listened to you. I get you. I'm not brushing you off. Now, these skills we're talking about, these things, might seem obvious, but they go a long way in a peer-to-peer activity where somebody's a leader and you're leading over somebody else. Acknowledge them, okay? Because remember, givers get. Takers get taken, okay? So if I'm a giver, I'm going to give. It's circular. I'm going to get back because I give, because I want to give. A taker is going to take you for their benefit. Eventually, it gets taken from them. They're not going to achieve. They're not going to move forward. They're not going to strive to where they need to be. In other words, they're going to out themselves, Jay, over time. Yeah. Somebody does nothing but take. Okay? So give of yourself. But one of the things that I really work hard on, and I really do have to work hard on it. Maybe not here. I got to do that for Jay. I got to work better on not interrupting Jay. When you have a conversation with somebody, truly listen. So you said it earlier. I think one of the most important leadership skills is the listening skills. I really want to hear what you have to say. And in order to make you understand that I do hear you, I'm going to repeat it back to you, not all of it, but a portion of it, okay? So Jay comes to me and says, I think I need a new work truck. I've been here for 10 years. This truck is, it's always, it's causing, and I'm going to go, okay, Jay. I mean, after you're done, I'll go, I hear you. I hear you. So what you're saying is the truck is old. It's always giving you trouble. I'll go through the list of things that are obvious. And then maybe Jay, who's the leader here to his employee, maybe Jay can't buy Chris that truck he needs right now. But he does acknowledge these issues. And at the end, he wraps it up and goes, I acknowledge it. It's bad. It's dirty. It doesn't set a good image. You're right. But I need you to understand, it's not in the budget right now. It's not. I would love it just like you would. And that's our goal. We're going to shoot for that. We want to have that. And I want to have that for you. But right now, it's not. So there's a way that you can hear whether you always have to agree. You can turn it in a different direction. But the listening skills and be able to acknowledge somebody. Half the time, that a leader that acknowledges people is the one that people say, well, you know what? They walk away from that conversation and goes, well, now I get why I can't have this new truck now. I get it. I get it. Instead of going away going, he didn't listen to me. He was never going to buy one. He was never going to do, you know what I'm saying? Acknowledge them, listen, acknowledge. And then at the end, bring them back around on why you can't rather than just saying no.
Yeah.
That type of thing.
Yeah. And no, that's, I wait my 3 seconds.
Yeah.
Okay. That was really good. Mm-hmm. I'm actually already doing the 3 second rule. I wrote that one down on my paper. You know, and Chris and I have talked about this too. Is he goes? He's asked me before. He goes, "Hey, boss man, what do I do if I don't have a direct answer? You know, maybe to a question." And it's something that you and I have talked about, and him and I have talked about this before. And it's going, you know what? It's just being honest. Going, hey, you know what? I don't have the answer right now for you, but if you give me until the end of the day today or tomorrow and let me use some of my resources, I'll get back to you as soon as possible. You know, and I think that right there, instead of going, I don't know, you know, or you kind of get for, cause it's just sometimes when you're out there, don't get me wrong. When you're in a leadership role, people are going to test you, right? Mm-hmm. Like I know this is leadership training, but as in your training, as becoming a leader, then also in that leadership role, people below you, or even at the same level, they're going to test you, right? They're going to try to frustrate you. Maybe they might be a little smart with their remarks. And the best thing to do, again, is just, if you don't know, it's just, hey, you know, I don't know it right now, but I'll tell you what, I'll get back to you on this. Let me reach out to some people. I'll email you by the end of the night. And then you're not just going, no, I don't know. Or no, that's not something I want to talk about right now, you know, or, you know, cause you can be busy. And again, people are always asking the questions. So,
you know, you don't have to always have the answers.
Yeah. You're not always going to have the answer. It's just, you're not going to do it.
You know where to get it. You know, you might know where to go to get it. You might say, you're right. I love that approach where you're honest, brutally honest. You go, look, I don't know the answer right now, but I can get the answer. And I want you to know that I care about getting you an answer. That goes a long way. It's not wishy-washy. It's a professional site, professional job site, professional leader. It's just setting the image and, you know, it goes a long way. Hey, let's go tit for tat here on, I believe it's the six good leadership skills. Let's go tit for tat, a mark of a good leader. And just read this, because I was just kind of looking over. This is pretty good information for a leader, and we can elaborate on it. You want to do number one, and we can elaborate? It's an observation.
Yeah, you're talking about the number one observation?
Yeah.
All right. Yeah, observation. This is an important aspect that often gets neglected due to the demands on a leader's time and schedule. So, you know, we do get busy. Mm-hmm. Observations and regular visits to the work environment needs to be scheduled into the calendar. Observing employees, work procedures, and the workflow is foundational to implementing adjustments to improve results, which is very much needed. To have credibility, a leader needs to be seen and be known to be up to date with what is happening in the workplace. Yeah, I agree.
So a leader that sits in the office and never goes to the site, when it's time to review your people, how can you be a reviewer? If a leader on the job site, a lead guy, is leading the people under him, if he's not actively engaged in the work and being involved in it, how can they give criticism? How can they give performance reviews? How can they know what's going on, know what the needs are? You've got to observe. You got to get out there. I know plenty of leaders who lead from the ivory tower, and they never get out with the people that actually make them the money, right? So I always say that with Uncool Wire, all of us that are in the ivory tower, say corporate, the people out in the plants are the ones making the money. They're the ones that are putting the wire and making the cable and doing all that stuff. So you have to appreciate those people and get out there their managers get out there and interact with them. Same with any business. Jay, if you have Chris that's overseeing, Chris is in a leadership role, but he's very active with each one of the employees.
Daily.
Yeah, and then he's interacts with you, but same in token on you, you have to make sure that you get out and that you see that Chris is doing these things, not just saying, you know, somebody saying he's doing, that you actually see these efforts, that you stay connected with him, those type of things. And that's a good leader is going to be very observant. They're going to be able to see when somebody does something, you know, and take note to that. Next, I'll do the next one is monitor employees' performances. Employee performance needs to be monitored in mutually accepted ways. Policies and procedures need to be clear, obviously, precise, clear rules, no rules that are ambiguous or whatever that you can't really define. It needs to be very clear. People need to know their rules. A good leader communicates and lets you know what the rules are and when you're breaking those rules and how the rules, you know, so they got to be clear, right? Conferencing should be on a regular basis and not just when there's a problem. That is a huge thing too. Don't call somebody in only when they have a problem with them. A good leader will have communication with the people that he leads or she leads on a regular basis. Not so that somebody thinks that the only reason they're going to see the owner or the leader is because they've done something wrong. Absolutely right. Not. It should not be as a penalty. Should be communication with them, things like that. Observing employees for work procedures and workflow. Oh, wait a minute. I'm on the wrong one. Sorry. It says assessments and evaluations should not be merely all formality or paperwork to be done. Individuals and group conferencings should be undertaken and the expectation of ongoing professional development. There should be frequent encouragement and clear criteria for ongoing goals, both the group or individually. Whether or not you have a group of pod, whereas you have Chris may have a couple guys that oversee, and maybe you have a different project manager that oversees something else. But there needs to be communication, group meetings, everybody on the same page all the time. Clear rules, you know, wired up. Electrical design has to have clear rules, clear procedures, things like that, so that it doesn't create any environment where it's stressful for that and everybody. And you really need a leader needs to constantly be monitoring and keeping aware of all employees, what they're doing, that type of thing.
Yeah, I think that's some area that as you grow in a company as well, we've been in business for 6 years now and we're going stronger than ever. But we're always trying to implement new ways to improve. And sometimes that's going back on maybe old rules and putting in new ones. You know, no one likes change, but again, comfort and growth don't really go together. So you're always trying to change and improve. I think even when Chris isn't around though, you know, mother crew leads, I have a lot of respect for those guys. And I think they've grown into their leadership roles, should I say, to be able to make judgment decisions on the job. You know, if you're mm-hmm. seeing one of your apprentices mishandling a tool, let's say, and you can see what he's going to do, maybe cut himself or something that you've done before, and he's going to do the same result, you step in and you go talk to him, you know. So it doesn't, and vice versa, the apprentice might even see that might be an opportunity for an action for him to step up as a leader, even though it is towards the leader to put their input in. And that's why leadership isn't always just a position. It's an action. Everybody can be a leader at any given time. It's just with that leadership, there is responsibilities too. You know, when you go in and you make that comment and you make that choice, there is going to be, you know, the risk or reward on that as well. So for three, implementation of professional development programs, a good leader evaluates weaknesses and provides training and development strategies to strengthen the weaker skills in the team.
And you do, you
know, we do videos. Yeah, mm-hmm. we do that. And sometimes Chris will even, he's out in the field troubleshooting, Chris, my project manager. He'll go out there and he'll go, man, boss, man, this is like the third time I've seen this three-way switch wired incorrectly. You know, I'm always going back on these go backs. And again, his time isn't free. He's salary, but his time is not free.
It's,
you know,
not
he has
free.
He has other better things to do.
Sorry, it's not free.
Yeah. It's not free. So, you know, sometimes
I used to say a fancy thing with salary was, if it was time for you to get off at 4 and I needed you to be there till 5, that was salary. You know, if I need you to be there,
yeah,
that is salary. So, you know, to go that extra mile for me, not say, dude, I'll get off at 4. If you're salary, no. Now, I'm not asking you to do anything that I wouldn't be able to do, but if I need
that's
you,
right.
That's why you're salary. Okay. If not, I'd pay you hourly and just be done with it. But you also send all your people through, they can go through the IEC, the local chapter or whatever, to training you do, isn't it? Or what do you do for the schooling that they can do that you offer? Are you,
So for the trade school, we, after a year with us, we will pay your way for schooling. You just have to pay your books. You know, we kind of, we allow you to use the benefits that we have because we're an IEC member. So mm-hmm. You get discounts on your books, on your schooling. We have like 2 employees now who have not been with us for the year, but I believe one or both are going to school. So what happened was we allowed them to use a discount. We actually put the money up front for them, mm-hmm. and then they just give it back to us.
Awesome.
So, some way. And that's all HR. But yeah, we definitely, and the crazy thing with us is, and Chris will tell you this too, is we're primarily residential, and you don't see too many residential contractors putting their employees through school in Colorado, because for your residential wiremans, you don't need the schooling experience. For your journeyman's license, you do. So like, for example, Chris is actually a second year student in IEC this year. He's already a residential wireman. His old boss didn't put him through school. So now we thought he was grandfathered in. So we filled out his affidavit after it was time. We submitted for his master's. They're like, the state was like, nope, you need to go to school. And he goes, all right, boss man, well, I'm going to have to go to school. And it's like, well, let's do it. You know, and actually kudos to him, because a lot of guys wouldn't do that. They would just be comfortable with their role, right? They're project manager. They have their license. They're making money. They're good. He's like, no, I still want to improve. And that's one thing that I really respect about Chris is that he's always trying to improve himself, if not those below him. And I think when you do that, it's just an instinct to then you kind of like have that father mentality where you're always like the people below you are your kids now, right? You're like, okay, I'm trying to get up here, but in order for me to get up here, I need you guys to get up where I'm at. So mm-hmm. I'm not, it's like double duty, and it's, mm-hmm. man, it's a pain in the butt, but it's well worth it in the end. So yep. Kudos to you guys who are always trying to grow and get better.
Cool. The next one, I guess, for leadership, and this is important, we kind of talked a little bit and touched about, is demonstrate working knowledge and expertise. Somebody posted something a little earlier in the chat. A good leader is a good worker, or, you know, something like that. Well, I think a lot of times if you put a leader, and I'm going to read this one, but if you put a leader in a role of leadership, but they don't have the knowledge, and this happens, you know, I see
all the time.
Trust me, I see it all the time. I see it recently with a big company I may work for, where you put people in a certain position and give them this big title, and they don't have the knowledge to do it. So they kind of fumble their way through it. Now, if you're a leader, you don't want to come across that way. You don't. So you have to use that identification to know your strengths and weaknesses, and you're going to tackle those weaknesses, because you'll find those weaknesses pretty quick if you try a leadership role and you find out you're having trouble as a leader. So this one is demonstrate working knowledge and expertise. It says good leadership comes from a place of strong knowledge and experience of the production and process leading to results. If a leader does not possess all the expertise and knowledge personally, he or she should then hold regular consultations with experts, mentors, other people. Identify your weaknesses. Yep. Decide what you need to do to overcome that weakness, because ultimately it makes you a more effective and a better leader, and it also helps you reach those goals that you're shooting at. Okay, maybe you want to be a vice president, or you want to be co-owner, or you want to own your own company someday. Those are all goals. But if you're a leader and you don't have the expertise in something, it's hard to lead. You know what? It's hard for me to take somebody into battle, right? If like I kind of think of this, Jay. If I go back to the Revolutionary War and I have George Washington, which is one of my all-time heroes, okay? Yeah. I can imagine those people, the way he carried, if you watch any documentary on him, early on, George Washington was not a real effective leader. They didn't win a lot of battles early on in his career. Now, fast forward it to the Revolution and certain battles, he exhibited leadership skills that he learned over time. He progressed, okay? And what I think about this is when you read the history or you watch anything on George Washington and how he did and how he was at terrible odds and what he pulled through, with the help of obviously his other generals as well. But the parody to me with this is his people, even if they had no food, if they were freezing, they were willing to go to battle for this guy. They were willing to follow them. Good leaders, Patton, all those, you know, Storm and Norman, all of those people, they believed in him. He set the example. They walked the walk, and they believed in him. And that goes a long way. Not when you hire a paper pencil pusher general who now gets put in a leadership role, who has never seen any action. These guys that are on the infantry, they don't want to follow that dude. Right? No. So same thing. He's if you're a leader in a company and you're put in that position or you want to be a leader and you got to develop that humility, you have to know when you're wrong and admit it, and you have to identify your weaknesses and you have to isolate them and try to scratch each weakness off the list. Okay, I have a weakness in this. Okay, I got to work on this. I got to work on this. I got to work on this. Slowly knock down. If knowledge is your weakness and you having to tell guys to do things or gals to do things and you don't understand what it is, then you need to get your hands dirty. Okay? You need to learn it, whether it's night school, taking a class online, taking it from somebody else, calling an expert, calling your mentor. You need to learn it. Okay? Definitely hard for me to follow a leader who I can't follow a leader if they can't walk the walk. If you know, that's just that type of thing. So it is important in order to maintain the accurate and informed overall picture. If you don't know what's going on, how can you be a leader towards what's happening? Okay.
Right.
If I've never wired a house, how can I have a bunch of guys that are wiring a house and then I have the ability to go there and lead them? You know, barking orders isn't leadership. Okay. That's not leadership. So
delegating it.
But you know what? You
can delegate.
You have to know when you delegate it to somebody that person can get the job done because you've been there.
Oh, sure.
You see what that
guy's
doing.
And you can guide them through it.
Yeah. Then you can guide them through it. Okay.
You can guide them through good decision-making. Good leadership is characterized by the ability to make good decisions. A leader considers all the different factors before making a decision. A clear decision creates confidence in the leadership.
Wishy-washiness doesn't go anywhere for a leader.
Can't do it.
Tell somebody to do this and go, well, maybe not. I don't know. I tell you what, you can't tell somebody to do something and then be wishy-washy on it. Do your due diligence first, and when you're ready to make that decision, right, be committed to it as a leader. And look, Jay, as we tell people all the time, if you make a decision and ultimately it's the wrong decision, okay, live and die by the sword. Make a decision. Nobody likes a wishy-washy leader. You know what I'm saying?
Yep. Got to make the decision. And then to lead it out, ability to conduct and evaluate research, ongoing review and research is vital in order to keep on the cutting edge in business while managing the present to ensure ongoing excellence in performance and product. A good leader is always able to look towards the future. Conducting and evaluating research is an important way of planning and being prepared for the future. An excellent leadership is always proactive rather than reactive, which is definitely proactive is the way to go. By developing these six management skills that we just went over, it will help your journey becoming a great leader. I think for us leaders, it could be just as simple as on ability to conduct and evaluate research. It can be as simple as knowing what the task is for the next day. Yeah. You know, it can be as simple as that. It's as simple as knowing, okay, tomorrow we're wrapping up today. Maybe I'm the crew lead. I'm the leader of the job. I could be on a residential or commercial job, and I have five guys under me. And I go, okay, well, Johnny, where'd you get to today? Okay, you got to there. Tomorrow, in your mind, you're thinking already, okay, tomorrow he's going to finish what he's doing by about noon, and then I got him going to the roof to do this. Okay, but Tim over here, he's already completed his task. Now I got to think of tasks for him. So not only is it task managing it, but also what are they going to need to get those tasks done? You know, sometimes those leaders in the electrical industry, we're always, as leaders, we're trying to always be one or two steps ahead. And that's that's where we try to be. And I'll tell you what, guys, it's not always perfect. I've had times where my guys call me up there. Hey, Jay, where's the material for this job? And I'm like, oh, crap, did I not send that off? And I didn't send it to my supply house to drop off. So now I feel like I didn't meet my expectations. And so then it's like, okay, how do we solve this then? Well, one, you could go to Home Depot. I'll send you the final count sheet and you can go to Home Depot and pull the material yourself. Two, you can start prepping up maybe your boxes and your receptacles, and I'll do a will call at the supply house. Again, it's not as if you're, everything's going to be peaches and cream when you're a leader and everything's going to move the flow for you. You're going to run into obstacles, is what I'm saying. And when you run into those, it's always how are you going to handle those as well, you know. And that's and you can prevent that by trying to look into the future, but just know you will make mistakes as well. And yeah. And it's okay. That's the humbleness, right? You want to humble. You know, you're like, okay, I thought I had this, man. I was on a month streak of getting all the material there on time, and then it's like, the guy calls you, and I tell you what, this is what happens. Once he calls you, your other crew lead's going to call you, and he's going to say the same thing probably that same day or the next day. And you're going to go.
That's called, what is that, Murphy's Law?
Yeah, that's the Murphy's Law. And when it happens, it happens in threes. So it's like.
Lastly, before we get to our final session, obviously we all know what's coming. I will tell you this one thing that here's a little diamond for you that people have heard me say for many years. When it comes to a leader, always practice the 60-40 rule. Do you know what the 60-40 rule is, Jay?
I would say 60% good, 40% bad, and try to be on the good side of it. I don't know if you're looking into people.
No, so the 60-40 rule is that I might know 60% of something, But I don't know it all. So I'm always trying to fill my beaker to the top. But my beaker of knowledge is 60%, let's say. And for people like me, some people say, well, mine's 80-20. I know 80% of everything. Whatever.
Right.
60-40 rule is, you know, 60% of something that you'll retain. Remember, you might have good knowledge as a leader, but somebody else has 60% and you're the 40. You can always learn something from somebody else. So when I go to seminars or I'm watching other people that I look up to in this industry, if I know a lot about code, for example, but there's other people that I can take tidbits of things that I can go, I didn't know that. So guess what? I get to add some of their knowledge. Even if it's one thing, I get to steal that, right? And I get to put it into my reservoir of knowledge. Right.
Yeah.
So it's one of those things that Matt says that he's heard that it's 80% listening and 20% talking. Probably a great leader is probably more like 90-10, 90% listening, 10% talking. Probably.
Yeah.
But I get that's just the rules of thumb. But the 60-40 means that I might know electrical code. 60% of that code book I know. Let's use it that so people can understand. 60% of that code book I know. I just know everything about it. But there's 40% of that I might not. Or there might be 60% of a history of something that I know and 40% I don't. So then I get into a conversation with a buddy of mine. Let's say it's Jeff Sargent with an FPA or Mark Odie with UL or Keith Laughlin with IAI or other people that I would roll in those circles with. Phil Simmons, a good friend of mine. Charles Miller, who wrote the book for the course we use in the Fast Tracks. Different people that I the circles I roll in, I learn to listen to what they say because I know that they have a 60% knowledge of the code. Nobody can know it all. Okay, we know the core stuff very well. But he's going to throw a tidbit out there. Let me give you a great example. Mark Odie. I don't know if people that don't know Mark Odie, the knowledge that he has of, for example, hazardous locations, I don't spend a lot of time in 500, 501, 502, 503. I don't. I mean, I know it, how to teach it. I know how to look up the code. But he's been in it, designing these things for years. He has this intimate knowledge. So if we have a conversation or he's teaching something on 500, 501, 502, 503, hazardous location, I listen because I'm going to take tidbits from him and put it in my beaker of knowledge, trying to keep my, because as we get older, that percentage of fill, that 60% starts to dwindle. If you don't use it, you lose it, right? So certain things come down. So the importance of listening is you don't know somebody else who's looking at it at a different perspective might give you something that can enhance your perspective. So that's the kind of how I approach it, the 60-40, that type of thing. Of course, when I'm talking with Jay, it's more like a 90-10. But at the end of the day,
90 my side.
That side? Okay. Okay.
Come on.
I'm just saying. All right.
Come on.
All right. Hey, are we ready for the dun dun dun? This will be a quick one tonight because we are running over. But we are going to go now to
Code Turd of the Week.
All right. Jay's got his hat. It is Code Turd of the Week, folks. All right. So remember, if you have any turds you want to send to us, we're not talking literally, but a code turd in the code, then you can send it to us at host or hosts, H-O-S-T-S or H-O-S-T, at electricianlive.com. Send us your picture. We'll give you credit for it and holler out at you. Holla on the show. Yeah. Definitely. We'll do that. So tonight's come from electric.shin. I guess another Instagram or whatever. Same one. This guy takes a lot of pictures of some turds.
I think that's his whole platform, his is just taking code pictures or reposting pictures of turds, man. And I mean, he or she, whoever runs that electrician form, they do a lot of it, man. There's quite a bit. Some of it's, again, obviously just things that we can't really relate code to because it's not so obvious. Like this one, they're obviously missing KO seals and using box extensions that we'll go over. But yeah, check him out on Instagram if you want to just a kick of some funny installations, man. It's hilarious.
Yeah. So Matt says, what would be the purpose somebody would do it? Now, first thing, Matt, we never know why somebody might do this kind of crap. I mean, we don't know that. Obviously, it could be to bring it out to the surface.
It does kind of look like it.
Maybe they're bringing a bunch of wires or they have a plan to, and they think that it's going to give them additional cubic inches, you know, in order to be able to make their wires in there for box fill. Who knows? But they obviously have a 110.12A violation. They've got that knockout that needs to be plugged. Okay. In the field of, look, his turds even light up. Jay's turd hat's got lights on.
That's right, man. Okay. Light it up.
So, all right. So, see, that totally took me off my game. All right, so we're talking about replacing the knockouts. Of course, we're not going to say about cover on the box or anything like that because this is obviously they're still in the work in progress. The other thing that you have to be aware on this is you said it in the beginning, Jay, that this happens to be a 110.3B violation because boxes have box extenders, but box extenders aren't extenders. They're designed and listed to go onto a box, to extend a box, and it will add the same cubic inch as the box, right? But in this case, you have a box with the box extender and another box extender and another box extender and another box extender on it, okay? So in this case, you have a violation of the use of these box extenders, right? Now, maybe he was trying to bring it up to the surface. I don't know, but it still does, you know, if anybody had to, the chances are that MC cable that comes in, when it comes in and comes through that box, 300.14 is going to say that it has to have at least 6 inches of insulation for the point where it enters into the box, emerges from the cable, okay? Now, it does, if you have a box, I think it's 8 dimensions in any 8 dimensions or more in any direction, then you have to have 3 inches out the outside of the box. Now, if he came into the back of this box and he's put a splice back there, and he doesn't have the amount of wire that he needs in order to be able to adequately make up this box. So there's chances are there's splice after splice in there. We can't see in it, so we can't comprehend that part of it. But I believe what he's going to be running into is, if you look at the number of raceways that are going into it and in the actual MC that's coming into the front, and then you see the MC coming into the back, and then you have the other raceways coming in, their chances are that the conductors are not long enough in that box anyway in order to be able to extend out beyond the box. Now, those don't have any dimensions that would be greater than 8 inches, by the way. That's just a 4x4 box or 11x16 box or whatever it looks like, right? Mm-hmm. So you wouldn't be able to get to the conductors in the box. So we got a 110-3B. That's already wrong. You've got a 300.14 more than likely violation, free conductor in the box, and you can't see in the box. And of course, we have a very evident 110.12A knockout missing application. And you know what? The EMT could be secured within 3 feet either side. We can't see that, so we can't speculate on all that type of stuff. But an inspector would call out most certainly 110.3B on this installation. And then, of course, the electrician's got to say, well, look, I had to do this because the box is set back. And, you know, and the inspector would say, no, you didn't have to do that. You could have bent your EMT to come out and put your box out where you need to have it. That type of thing.
Yeah.
Just because you didn't doesn't mean you can't, and doesn't mean the inspector's going to look the other way, you know?
Eiffel Tower of boxes. Yeah. You know, I've actually seen this same install.
In one of Jay's jobs? Oh, I'm sorry.
No. No, you don't really see us using metal boxes and tubing. We're more of a non-metallic liquid tight and cable. But I actually seen this in a mall where I don't know what the fire alarm guy was doing, but there's fire alarms every, let's just say, every 20 feet. And they're hanging down from the ceiling to, say, 20 feet. Mm-hmm. Well, one of the installs, their pipe was only 15 feet, so they or 16, so they did this same exact install, but they had probably twice as many box extenders. They had about 8 to 10 box extenders.
So what were they trying to make, a impromptu wireway or something?
I don't know. I just think they cut their piping short, and the only way they could extend it down for their fire alarm to match the other levels was with the box extenders. And it passed, and I guess it passed. Everything was, you know, it was painted white, just like all the other boxes and tubing in that place. But I seen one. It was like, I could have swore it was 10 extensions. I counted. It's hard to see up there because you're like, 1, 2, 3. Your eyes start hurting, but I could have swore it was like 10 of them, man. So, bring your fire alarm, guys. You want to call you out in the field.
Yeah, so again, the extension rings are designed to extend the space for a box, not to extend the space for an extension ring on an extension ring on an extension ring on an extension ring. Now, the old saying is, some people out there will say, one, I can't see it from my house, and y'all know I don't like that saying. And two, the guy say, you got to do what you got to do. No, in this case, you didn't got to do this, okay? Yeah, you could fix this, okay? So anyway, that is the code turd of the week. Again, if you know of a good install or you run across one, hey, help us out. We look for these different turds, but if you find one, or you're on Instagram, you're on, you know, whatever you find, go on and send it to us. Make sure you include who the owner is of the picture, even if it's probably just a generic picture online, because we want to give them a shout out, right? Yep. That type of thing. Wiring Guru says, what would be your best approach here? Yeah, for me, if you notice above that box, you see it's got a coupling on it, and I'm sure there's probably one down. I would actually move this box over and put one on it. You got a stud right there. It looks like they did screw that up the top. It looks like a screw. They screwed it on the side of the stud. I would have simply rerouted my conduits over to the box that should be near the front. Because the metal box, if you're going to put, Also, you'll notice that that box looks like it sits back from the edge of the framing member. So I don't know if they're going to sheetrock or should say gypsum board or whatnot. But obviously, depending, it would have to be, if it's a combustible wall, it would have to be flush. If it's non-combustible, it can go back a quarter of an inch. But I would bring the box up, put the box where it needs to be, bring my MCs into it. And at the worst, I could have one box with an extension and I'd be fine. I don't need all those extensions. So, yes, they would have to go and reroute the conduit.
Yeah, and if the conductors in there aren't. Tubing in this case,
it looks like EMT, so... It looks like EMT, yeah, with the fitting. So I would reroute the EMT. That's what I would do. I wouldn't accept.
I would just do an access panel. I'd leave it back there if they're trying to bump it out to the face, then yeah, you're gonna have to repipe it. But if you're just trying to, if it's a J box that you're trying to just put a blank on it and do that, I would just put an access panel, a 6x6 access panel.
It depends, because if your owner might not want an access panel in the side of their wall to open up and there's a box back in there. So if I'm going to go that route, I might as well bring it out and put a cover on it, you know, that type of thing. So
I mean, that seems like quite a bit, man.
Yeah, but they don't need all that. I guess it just depends on what it is. With the wires in there, they don't need all of that space, and they're not doing it to get cubic inch, because that wouldn't work. Okay, if that box was 28 cubic inches and then that extension is 28 cubic inches, you're not going to get 28 28 28 28 28 in this install. It's not how it works. You can get 28 and 28, right, if you were doing the box and the extension. And all you got to do is, the only thing they have to reroute is those two EMTs. And it looks like there's a coupling at the one at the top. So they could probably go up a little bit and do an offset or whatever and get over to it. Anyway, that's their problem, but that's not acceptable. And chances are it didn't get inspected anyway. So it wouldn't have mattered. But I am proud of them. They did put an MC strap within 12 inches of the box right there. So there you go. Box fill infinity and beyond. All right, there you go. So that is our code turd of the week, and we'd love for you to send in some. Find some doozies. We're going to try to step the game up and find some other good ones, but we'll keep looking. Right now, Jay's carrying a heavy load on looking for those. Thank you, Jay. But if you got some out there, help us out, folks. Send them in. Also, send in your topics you want for shows. We got some great shows coming up, Jay. I wrote these down, Jay. Let me just kind of give everybody a little bit of a peek. I think we agreed to these, Jay, of what's coming up in the future. Ready?
Yep.
So we're talking about doing a residential calculation standard method overview, kind of a quick down and dirty on a standard versus optional, kind of a quick down and dirty. Not going to do a calculation, just kind of tell you so that you learn the steps that you need to keep in mind, how to boom, 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 because people sometimes get confused with that. We're going to do one of our electrician lives are going to be 250.66 and 250.102, C1 and C2. Not going to get overly cozy. I know how that goes, but we want to talk about the differences between grounding electrode conductors and the supply side bonding applications and how to use these huge tables and how they're very similar. We're also going to do a 250.122 and 250.102D, which is dealing with equipment grounding conductors, sizing, all the nuances, as well as equipment bonding jumpers, because they're very similar. But we want y'all to know something. We're not just here for code, okay? We're here to make this thing enjoyable. So we do have some shows coming up called What is an Electrician's Healthy Work-Life Balance? And we'll give you some tips on a way to have a good work-life balance. And I'm excited about that one because I struggle with that all the time. Work-life balance, you only go around this world once. You only have family once. I'm always telling Jay, family first, as busy as we get, family first. I can tell you, not because I'm preaching, because I am telling you from experience. Been there, done that, reaping the not-so-good rewards of that as I got older. The next... Electrician tools. We want to talk about, Jay wants to pull out the tools. He wants to talk about the bare minimums that you need to be an effective electrician. There's a want list. We want everything, but there's also the bare essentials that you need.
And you know what I might even do on that one is I may even go to Home Depot or Lowe's or whatever, and I'll see if they have any kits or what they have. And just take some photos, snap photos. Oh, yeah. So you guys can actually see what the price is of these tools. Again, some of you guys are apprentices. Some of you guys are owners. We understand that this may not like really be too exciting for you, but again, for your knowledge, you may want to know this, because if you have someone coming in, you can refer them to Home Depot and get some tools. Cause they're really not, if you stick with a certain brand and you're not going top shelf, kind of like how you and I discussed before, you go to Harbor Freight. You can actually
you say it like that.
An actual
Paul goes to Harbor Freight
for his set of tools, and I'm pretty sure you're going to talk about that. So is his Harbor Freight tools better than my Home Depot tools? We'll see.
And everybody knows there's a set of tools at Harbor Freight that I think could rival any high end tool with a lifetime warranty.
Yeah,
let's save that. Save that. All right, and then of course we're going to do the one that I'm excited about. I don't know, because I will open up the cabinet to Paul's gun shop. Okay. Ooh. So we're going to have the gun show. That's going to be a fun episode where you get to see. No, that we're not talking BBs.
Oh, not this one?
We're not talking BBs. Oh. We're talking 44 Magnums, baby. Okay. We're talking the big guns. Okay. All right. Mm-hmm. So we're going to have.
You got to lift it up a little bit. Yeah, lift up a little bit. Yours was hanging down a little bit. Just saying.
That's a tricep. That's a tricep down there, buddy.
See that?
All right. Anyway, we're going to have the gun show. It ought to be excited. Everybody's always wanted to know what kind of guns do I have? And I'm a gun freak. Sorry. It is what it is. I'll show you my shotguns, my semi-automatic shotguns, my 357 Magnums, my 1911, my goody stuff, my AR-15s, and Jay will, I'll show you what I conceal carry. What I recommend is conceal carry. You know, it's gonna be just a fun show. That's gonna be fun. No code, Jay. No code.
Yeah, no code on that one.
No code on that one. We're just gonna talk guns. I mean, if you don't like guns,
we might have code turd of the week.
Still gonna have code turd of the week. Okay, so I guess we gotta have a turd of the week. We'll have a turtle week. So that's some of the shows. You can go see the list. It'll be updated probably by the weekend. You can just go to electricianlive.com, and you will see a list of all the upcoming shows. Of course, you can go there and listen to all these shows on rebroadcast if you will. You don't have to go to YouTube to watch them. You can actually go over to Electrician Live. They're all right there, and you just go down and watch them. There you go. All right.
Yeah, and next week's episode is on terminal limitations of 110.14C, examined and clarified. So we're going to go over, you know, the 60-degree column, the 75-degree column, and when you can use, when you can go outside of the normal, I guess you would say the normal charging statement in 110.14, because there are some, I don't want to say they're exceptions, but there are a number of lists that we'll go over to where maybe you can take advantage of a 75-degree column sometimes. So just stay tuned for that, because that's going to be a really, really good one.
Yeah, I mean, it ought to be good, because even last night in exam prep and all, questions still come up all the time. I posted an image on our Facebook page that's supposedly an image to help you understand the terminal limitations and stuff. Especially for the 100 amps or less and 14 through 1 gauge or 14 through 2, I can't remember. But that one, it follows on 110.14C1A. And I thought it was an easy illustration that people could really understand. But we'll go over all that. So by the time you end that show, you'll understand why, even though it's only a 30-amp circuit, for example, why I can use an insulation that's 75 or 90 degrees C, and why I can use the ampacities at 75 degrees C versus the 60, even though it falls within the general parameters of 110.14C1A. So you're going to learn all that. That'll be a great show. We'll dig down into it, the down and dirty, and explain all that. And if you have any questions, you're free to do that. And I guess we got a question come in from Wiring Guru, who must have had these things loaded on his screen. Matt must have had them ready to go, thinking, okay, Okay. So first thing, Matt, you're kind of new to this. Electrician Live isn't exam prep, and we don't go over exam prep stuff. This is electrician talk. However, since you are new, I will explain. Everything that you get learned about an electrical exam that comes to the NEC. For example, when we have students in our program, I tell them up front, I don't teach OSHA. I don't teach local rules. I don't teach laws. I don't teach OSHA. I don't teach NFPA 72. I don't teach any of that. I teach the National Electrical Code. Now, with that said, you go to take an exam in certain states, they're going to have a guide that's going to have supplemental things on it. They're going to ask you maybe questions on OSHA, and they're going to ask you questions maybe on NFPA 72 or something like that. That's incumbent on you to do that and research it, not something you learn. We teach the code. The hardest part is the National Electrical Code portion. For example, in many states that do have OSHA, they will have a bulletin that you can download, and it's the key things about the OSHA. Not everything about it, but key things that they want for their exam. So you can get these guides for that, but I don't know anybody out there who studied for a National Electrical Code and then went and got the OSHA and studied everything about OSHA to remember it. OSHA is about just looking up the things, okay? So tabs work great. If you've got tabs for OSHA and you got the OSHA document and you want to do that, they will help you. If your test has got OSHA, it'll definitely help you. I don't teach any of that. I think somebody else asked me today, Paul, do you teach resistors, the color coding system? Absolutely not. Never have taught it and have thousands of students pass their exam. I don't get into those type of things, teaching the coding system on a resistor. It's not electrical to me. Yes, it might be on a theory, but it's not going to be enough that you get the question. It's not going to be enough that you fail the exam. Look, I'm not asking a student to get 100% on an exam. That might be your goal, but that's not my goal. My goal is for you to learn the NEC, pass the exam, but I don't think resistors, color coding of resistors, I don't think the OSHA part, I don't think the other things like that help you become a better electrician, because those are the things that you can open up and learn. You can be aware of OSHA, okay? Remember, OSHA doesn't come messing with you and tell you what? Somebody gets hurt. Right? You don't have OSHA when you're dealing with single family dwellings. So, but when it comes to OSHA, usually big projects like that will have a safety person on the project, and they should be doing regular safety checks. So you just want to learn what it takes enough to get you to the exam, that type of thing. I don't know. And I've tested in multiple states. I wouldn't try to learn everything about OSHA to take an exam. There are not going to be enough questions on it to make or break you. Got to remember, if it's a 100-question exam and a 70% is passing, then you can miss 30 questions. You're not going to have 30 OSHA questions. You're not going to have 30 resistor questions, but you're going to have a lot of code questions. Focus on the code. Focus on the code. And I think sometimes when people fail an exam, they remember a question they failed, and they lose sense that the fact is that was just one question. There's tons of other questions, and you probably didn't nail all the NEC stuff. You know what I'm saying?
You're probably not going to get that question that you're so zoned in on again either.
Like, probably not.
When I took my master's, I failed the first go round, and you know, I after shedding a couple tears out in the truck and stuff, I got back on the high horse and I rescheduled it for the next weekend because I gave myself a week. And it was the big thing for me was PV. I don't do much PV, photovoltaics. So to me, it was kind of a new, and a lot of the questions I had on.
Yeah, but how many questions on your exam did you have on PV though, Jay?
I think only probably five. Okay. I mean, max. But again, that's code related stuff. So I was in the PV section. And I would continue to take my exam prep studies or exams continuously. And I was able to see the PV1s within those exams for that week. I was kind of honing in on those. But I also, again, I was doing the exams so I wouldn't lose, you know, 300 wiring methods or 250 with grounding and bonding. That still plays a huge part. But I did. I asked him what I failed in, and the areas I did, I kind of attacked a little more. But if you fail your exam, my biggest advice would be to reschedule quicker than later, okay. sooner than later. Just yeah. reschedule it. Because even if you fill it, there's a guy on your exam Facebook platform where I believe he failed it like 6 or 8 times.
Oh, yeah.
But then that, you know, that next one, he got it. And praise him for that, because at the end of the day, he battled through it. He had to pay for each one of those exams to keep taking those exams. And it probably costed him a ton of money, but he kept going. He kept putting his foot forward and he got it. And that was a big thing, right? Is getting your exam. So wiring guru. Mm-hmm. I'm pretty sure if you still have free content out there, I think on YouTube, on some of your stuff. Mm-hmm.
A lot of stuff right now. He's in the fast tracks. He's in the fast tracks.
Oh, he's in the fast tracks.
If he follows the fast tracks, you're not going to have a problem. Folks out there, if you're in the fast tracks and you follow it and you go through it and you follow my study plan, you'll be fine. If you jump around, you skip around, you think you know something, and you say, I'm not going to study that, then you'll have a harder time. You'll eventually get it, and that's okay. I can tell people, doctors, when you go in to get a surgery, do you ask the doctor how many times they failed their exam? When you hire an attorney, do you ask them how many times they failed the bar? Once they've achieved it, you just know that they're a doctor or lawyer. You know what I'm saying? So once you get it, I don't care whether you get a 71 or you get 100. Don't care. Don't even care to see the number of your score. It doesn't make me feel like, oh my God, he's so great. All I want to know is that you passed. You know what I'm saying? That's it. I don't care. You just passed by 1 point. That's perfect. Okay. Now, I want you to retain it, but it's passing the whole purpose of the fast tracks was for you to retain stuff. Okay? I don't do crash courses. I don't do those weekend things because I don't think you'll retain it. Yeah. I'll remember it. I just don't do those things. Could do it. Teach all those things. Get you in a seat for 8 hours each day and just hammer. I just think that you'd be brain overload and you just wouldn't get it. Right? I wouldn't get it, that type of thing.
Yeah, and to be honest with you, for the fast tracks, the price for the fast tracks, if you do one of those weekend crash courses, you're probably going to pay double the amount for that weekend crash course, because you are at the mercy of that instructor's knowledge.
Yep.
And to be honest with you, that instructor is going to go, okay, if you don't pass, you can come back again. That's no skin off that instructor's back. If he has to enroll you again, it's just one more person in a Zoom meeting or in one more butt in the chair. So
they don't care.
They don't care. You know, they'll let you take it for free up until X amount of times, but it's really not free because you're paying. Plus,
I have a guarantee,
to 600 to 700.
I have a guarantee, but you got to read the fine print on my guarantee. Like I'm very transparent what I do. Okay, I'm a corporation. I'm in this to make money. Okay. But I'm in there to teach people as well. Okay. So I don't give away everything for free. There's other people that want to do that. Do their 60-minute TikTok, 60-second TikTok. They do whatever they want. I'm not that. I'm a corporation. I have to make money. But I give away a fair amount of stuff for free. Okay. People know that. You can Google it. Find out all you want. But at the end of the day, you have to remember something, that there's certain things when it comes to exam, you need to understand a plan. You need to attack it. And you need to study it properly in order to be successful. You might stumble through it and pass it, but will you retain it? There's a method to it, and you just follow the method, and you'll have success. Also, Matt says something. There was a question about smoke detectors. Smoke detectors would be under NFPA 72, not 70, because that would be smoke alarms. So 760 within the NEC is where I go to find all those requirements for smoke alarms. Which are typically what they wouldn't be smoke detectors there, but that would be in 72 because generally they go back to a monitoring system, whereas smoke alarms are an audible alarm that goes on to the typical branch wiring of a house. So you would look in 760 for those type of aspects when it comes to smoke alarms, that type of thing. So anyway, we've gone over tonight, Jay. We've gone over our allowance tonight. So, I think we're going to have to bug out here.
Thanks for joining us.
Yeah. All right, folks. Well, everybody, I want to thank you for taking the time to join us here. Join us next week. Again, we do this every Thursday. Every Thursday at 8 p.m. Central Standard Time. Share it with everybody. Let people know about it. Look, we're here for you. Send me and Jay topics you want us to talk about. all those type of things, and we would love to add them to the show. If you got any code turds you want to send us, anything you run into, you find somewhere, send it to us. Again, just a quick email at host or hosts with an S, either one, at electricianlive.com. We'd love to get them, okay? All right, well, with that said, until next time, folks, stay safe. God bless.
You're listening to Electrician Live with your host, Paul Abernathy and Jay Brunberg.